pushing my luck.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. With that gavel, I am convening the Subcommittee on Transportation and Economic Development for June the 5th, 2017. We are gathered together for the purpose of a work session on House Bill 5019 relating to the financial administration of the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. Ms. Deister.
Yes. Well, the Legislative Fiscal Office is recommending a budget of $207,708,449 other funds, 304 positions, and 298.82 FTE. Now, as most of you know, there are basically two sides now to the OLCC. You've got the liquor side on one hand, and you've got marijuana on the other hand, and they have separate revenue streams supporting them. So, but we obviously put their budget together all as one big budget, and I'll try to, you know, delineate those things as we go forward where it's important to realize. Okay? So, basically, just by way of summary, the recommended policy option packages related to the distilled spirits side of the house include an increase in limitation for bank card fees associated with the 50-cent per bottle surcharge that is currently in place that's been imposed by the Oregon Liquor Control Commission, and also additional agents' compensation related to that bottle surcharge.
Ms. Deister, I'm going to stop you just at the surcharge point. We have new members on the committee and new members to the legislature, and could you just comment on that surcharge so that everyone understands what we're talking about?
There is a 50-cent per bottle surcharge that is imposed by the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. I believe the first time it was imposed was 2013. Do I see nodding heads, or was it 2011?
2009.
Nine. So it's been there a while, and basically all of the revenue associated with that surcharge goes to the general fund rather than through the regular distribution formula.
I would just share, colleagues, that at the time that was negotiated, the idea was it was supposed to go to OSP, but it got lost on the way to the general fund.
That surcharge is estimated to generate about $35 million in revenue in the 17-19 biennium. So the OLCC is also undergoing a retail expansion effort where they are adding new stores to keep up with additional population, and to accommodate that, the Legislative Fiscal Office is recommending two FTE to help the OLCC manage and service those stores. Those include a full-time district manager and a permanent full-time business analyst position. And there are numerous reclassifications of existing positions to help the agency utilize their existing staff more efficiently, basically giving them expenditure limitation to enable them to pay for the differences in salaries. These are people that have generally been working out of class for the past few months, so we're catching them up to where they ought to be.
I'm going to ask you for one more clarification. I got so busy being snarky about the first 50-cent bottle surcharge that I'm not sure that you said this or not. The way that that can be imposed, if you would describe for our newer colleagues the implementation methodology.
The implementation methodology of that 50-cent surcharge is it is a vote basically that has been taken by the commission itself. So as a result, it's imposed by the OLCC. The legislature has enacted legislation to make the revenues associated with that flow directly to the general fund as opposed to through the regular distribution formula. And that has been consistent since its imposition back in 2009.
Representative Reardon.
So I'm just not sure I heard that correctly. Who actually determines the 50 cents or other amount, whatever the amount would be?
The commission voted for, the commission took a vote and imposed that surcharge.
So they could change it?
They could.
Okay.
Yep.
Thank you.
In fact, the governor's recommended budget would have asked the OLCC to increase that surcharge by an additional 50 cents. Oh. That is not assumed in the LFO recommendation.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep. Okay. So then on the other side.
Whoops, Senator Monroe.
Yeah, a little bit more on that.
first came in 2009. That was the recession year, you'll recall, coming out of the huge downturn that started in 2008. And so we were looking for money everywhere. And thought at the time, or some people thought at the time, this would be temporary. Obviously, it's still there, so it hasn't been temporary. But also, any other tax increase the legislature has to vote on. But this one, we didn't have to vote on. OLCC did it, and we just sort of looked the other way, and they imposed it. For example, hard liquor is taxed much more highly than beer or wine, especially more than beer. But if we increase the beer tax, which it hasn't been for 40 years, we would have to vote on that. And the legislature's been shy about voting for an increase in the beer tax. Since the last time I got to vote on an increase was 1977, when I was a freshman, a little bitty freshman representative.
Anyway. Ms. Deister, please continue.
Okay. So the LFO recommendation assumes maintaining the rate of agents' compensation at an average of 8.93% of sales. The LFO recommendation is estimated to generate $326.1 million for the general fund, and that includes that surcharge revenue. And distributions to cities and counties from liquor revenue are estimated at $176.4 million for cities and $51.9 million for counties, with $19 million assumed to be distributed for mental health. On the marijuana side of the equation, you will remember that in phase two, OLCC, came in and we're talking about the fact that there are far more licensees than had originally been anticipated in the current biennium, and the number of applications continues to go up, and more are coming in every day. And as a result of that, their enforcement costs and the support administrative type of costs are also going up to keep up with that workload. As of March 23rd, 2017, the number of licensees was 1,052 and 12,439 worker permits. We had originally estimated for 15-17 that we'd have 830 active licensees and 6,200 worker permits. So as you can see, it has increased substantially, and the OLCC does not anticipate that level of activity is really going to level off until about the end of the 17-19 biennium, if then. So in order to accommodate that, obviously, to ensure that those licensees are indeed adhering to statute in terms of tracking their product correctly and that OLCC is monitoring that product correctly, there are increases in enforcement associated with the marijuana side of the equation, and there are also increases in administrative staff, and we'll walk through the specifics of those as we go through the packages.
I have a high-level question, and that is, in the presentation that OLCC did, there was an ongoing conversation with AFSCME, or was it SEIU? It's SEIU. To ask me to between how you were going to qualify these folks, what positions are there, was a pay differential at one time. They were going to be enforcement at one time. They were going to be paper processors, licensee renewers. Has that been resolved? I'd ask the director to come up and answer that.
50 cents.
And bring whatever lifelines he deems appropriate.
So the answer is mostly yes. We've gone through our negotiations. Contract needs to be modified. They moved up, I believe, to, this will be meaningless, but to a 27 for the inspectors, and for the licensed investigators, I think they couldn't support the 26
or 25.
So we ended up creating a differential between the two units that were commonly paid before. for the two position
categories. When you say a differential, you created out of whole cloth a step, or what did you do?
They did create step differences between them.
Okay, based on some review by DAS or based on?
It was a Hay review and comprehensive salary analysis, and the choices that were presented to them ended up differentiating between our inspectors and investigators.
And have you calculated the cost differential between the 25 and the 26 and the 26 and the 27?
For the record, Bill Schutte, economist, that has not been calculated. That a lot of that's still under negotiations with the unions.
Okay, so Ms. Deister, we're approving a budget today that has some variables that have yet to be negotiated. Help me understand how we're going to reconcile that.
Okay, and I would just add that the director, for the record, is Steve Marks with the Oregon Liquor Control Commission.
Excuse me.
obviously, there will be opportunities to do that both at the end of session reconciliation bill. If that is decided at that time, we have another opportunity to true those things up in February of 2018. And usually, going into a regular long session, there is a current biennium's final budget reconciliation bill that is usually passed early in the session. So we have multiple opportunities to catch that up. You know, to the extent that it drives additional increases in other funds expenditure limitation, OLCC needs to be mindful of that because the marijuana side is supported by licensing revenue, and we want to make sure that they maintain a decent ending balance for contingencies.
I would very much like that calculation, 25 to 26, 26 to 27, and the differential between 25 and 27 calculated so we can see it monetized.
Perfect. Can do that.
Okay. Let's keep going.
Yes. So for now, we're working with the knowns as opposed to the unknowns and going
you guys
ahead
might
and
just
moving
stay
forward.
There.
So finally, just to summarize, this recommendation also includes the incorporation of Senate Bill 1057 that I believe has passed both chambers by now, and that bill requires the Oregon Liquor Control Commission to track and inspect medical marijuana producers, processors, and retailers and add them to the cannabis tracking system. Now, these are still licensees of OHA, and so marijuana tax money would be transferred to OLCC, about $1.8 million in startup costs for that. And ongoing tax revenue would be transferred on a semi-regular basis based upon the OLCC's costs to support those medical licensees that OLCC is now making sure entered into the cannabis tracking system so that they can monitor product and make sure that it does not leak out the back door. That's
good luck with that.
So, okay. With that, we can start walking through the packages, and I'm going to go kind of quickly because I would really not want to keep you here till 2:30 if we can avoid it. So please stop me mid-sentence and ask questions as we go. So for the distilled spirits program, the Legislative Fiscal Office recommends a budget of $25,902,473.68 positions, 68.00 FTE. Package 090 is that expenditure limitation for bank card fees associated with the 50-cent bottle surcharge. That's $855,254.
As long as the director is still here, the bank card fees, how does that work right now? The agency handles the costs and the negotiations on the fees. How's that? I just don't understand how it's working.
So, Madam Chair, for the record, Steve Marks, Executive Director of OLCC. So we do pay the bank card fees for them. It was part of, in the historical context, right, when they came in from being or out went out from state-owned stores to this private sector thing. The credit card piece went with them, and then we negotiated the credit card payments to bring credit cards into the stores there. We do pay those fees. They are, and I spoke to this in our hearing, they are widely variable in what we pay and pretty inequitable between them, but we do pay the fees that are associated with their credit card sales.
If we're all, and this may be an erroneous assumption on my part, but if we're all using U.S. Bank as our clearinghouse through Treasury, why should yours be variable?
Yeah, it's a volume differences historically when they put them into place, and I think some of the initial contractual agreements with them, so they are variable, and as I said, we're inequitable across the board on those. So, and I believe that, you know, that's we talked about actually just doing away with that, working through the formula and figuring out how to compensate them in total that makes sense, that we could do equitable as one choice. Otherwise, we're going to have to re-examine how we allocate credit card fees to those businesses that do it.
Okay. Re-examine. You're paying them now.
Yes.
And what you just said, re-examine.
Re-examine in terms of the rate of reimbursement that we'd want to provide equity across the credit card fees, if that's the choice that we're going to continue to pay them, because today there are differences in volume and distinctions between the credit card fees for the individual stores. And I can tell you that we do not, and this was part of our prior testimony, we don't really have a consistent basis between them today. We understand the problem, and we're going to work on that with maybe, and I've talked to the agents directly about it, that we need to resolve this problem between them because they are not equitably paid.
I'm sorry to beat this to death, but I don't understand it. If I'm the proprietor of a $10 million store versus the proprietor of a $1 million store, am I to assume that I get a break on running $10 million of volume through my store versus the more expensive, fewer transactions through the $1 million store?
For the record, Bill Schutte, economist with OLCC again. It really depends on the rate of credit card usage, how many people are using credit cards, the type of credit cards that are being used in the stores, and that rate. The average now that we're paying is about 1.79%. And the amount of consumer sales that they can use credit cards for versus the amount of licensee sales to bars, which they cannot use credit cards for. So there's a number of variables in there that makes the rates individual for each agent.
Okay, last but not least, I know this because I was doing field work in one of your stores the other day and discovered that you don't take Amex, and I can understand why. But is the differential just volumetric? I mean, if you're the credit card charge, if you only take Visa and MasterCard, that rate ought to be fixed.
Yeah, Visa, MasterCard, Discover Card, I think there's a number of cards that liquor stores take. But those rates can be differential depending on which card is used and what the card the consumer is using out there.
I will do this offline because I feel like I'm just dragging information out of you guys, and I'm either too dumb to get it or you're not being real clear. Representative Gomberg.
Yeah, that's all right, Madam Co-Chair. I'm a little dumb myself today. If I'm hearing you correctly, the Treasurer's Office negotiates the deal, and the cards are processed at the store level. The stores send money to Treasury, and you reimburse the stores? Is that what I heard?
Send money to Treasury. Well, we reimburse them directly. It didn't go to Treasury before we did the reimbursement.
Who is them?
To the agents. So we reimburse them directly monthly, and we send the remittance, the balance, to the Treasury for distribution. the total sales of the alcohol. So part of it goes back, right? In 30 days' time, we send them back at the end of the month their compensation and their credit card fees.
And Coach, maybe we need to just pursue this a little bit offline.
I'd like to do that, because if Gomberg's Liquor Store is, he has $5,000 worth of credit card fees. He sends those to you guys, mm-hmm. and you reimburse him the $5,000.
Yes.
And it doesn't take into account that he's a high-volume store or a low-volume store. It's just you're reimbursing the agents right now for their credit card fees.
Correct. Purchases of liquor, yes.
Okay. But not the ancillary products that could be involved. If I buy a jar of olives, that's
correct.
Disallowed.
Yes.
Who disaggregates that stuff?
That's part of our financial services unit. They're in charge. They have to do that disaggregation and figure it all out. How much are ancillary products and how much are liquor sales, and get the appropriate documentation.
Okay. So Gomberg's store could have a 1.79 reimbursement. Could Johnson's store have a different rate?
2% of
the again, depending on the amount of the purchases, the rates of the cards, this and the sales that were done by credit cards.
With the 50 cents
okay.
So the rate.
Yeah.
I really am struggling with this. If you make a change in how you do this, because right now I just send you my credit card charges and you reimburse me.
$500 million.
Where will the decision be made?
Madam Chair, the decision will ultimately be made by the commission. I think we can make that. We may have to come back. I do want to make sure to check our statutory authorities to get that done. But one of the things that would help in putting together a change, right, if you regard credit cards as part of any private business's own cost, which it is for most private businesses, in this case we pay them, you might want to transfer it into their compensation, and then we'd work on the compensation side to level it, because the playing field isn't level amongst the way credit cards are used and reimbursed in the system.
One could also argue that if you've been paying that up to this point and you cap the reimbursement that they get, as we're going to do here, assuming this budget passes, and then you unilaterally or the commission decides that they're no longer going to reimburse agents, does that then artificially drive their cost of doing business? I mean, we've been doing it a certain way for a long time. Somebody decided it's inequitable. The commission is going to decide that maybe they push the cost back on the agents. What does that do to the highly controversial question of agents' comp that we have been debating since the first minute I walked in this building? And it seems to me that if you lard up their costs with now the credit cards, that that's going to be a real first-class problem for business people who have done fiscal projections based on you all picking up their credit card.
Madam Chair, agreed. I think we would put together a plan and come back and build it into the next biennial budget. It would take some time to negotiate, I think, the way to transfer this over to compensation. And we know there will be winners and losers in the credit card fee issue.
One last question. Are the agents going to have a say in this, or are they just along for the ride?
The agents will absolutely have a say in this. I have scheduled meetings in all regions of the state to meet with agents across the summer and into the early fall. We're going to have a discussion about this as it became clear in this budget cycle to me, and which is why we testified to it earlier about this necessity to work through this credit card fee issue with the agents.
Okay.
Okay.
Sorry, Ms. Deister.
That's okay.
Please continue.
Package 101 is the distilled spirits retail expansion package. The OLCC has stated that it would like to go from 248 stores that it had in 2016 to as many as 310 by 2018. It's approved 17 new stores to date in the current biennium, and additional expenditure limitation associated with two new positions is recommended to help to service those additional stores, provide service to those agents who are now operating those new stores. and ensure that they are able to process those transactions efficiently. Package 801. Oh, wait. Okay. I'm sorry. Okay, so package 801 are the bank card fees associated with the retail expansion effort. So the assumption is that because we're adding new stores, we will have additional sales associated with those new stores. And that, again, is going to drive additional bank card fees that need to be reimbursed for the agents to the tune of about $377,734. Our next division is the Public Safety Services Program, the Legislative Fiscal Office.
Can I ask a quick question?
Senator Hansel.
Thank you. I just want to make sure we are paying $1,232,000 in reimbursing bank card fees between these two.
Senator Hansel co-chairs, that is correct, and those are just on the increases that are assumed in this package. You're actually paying more than that in the base budget for the agency. Bank card fees are very much a part of the way that people pay for goods now. I would say probably the majority of transactions are based on plastic as opposed to cash.
Okay. Continue, please.
Okay, so the Public Safety Services Program, the Legislative Fiscal Office is recommending a budget of $20.1 million, $20,143,096 to be exact, 96 positions and 93.76 FTE. There are reclassifications. It says distilled spirits program reclassification because I couldn't change the package name in Orbitz, but there is a reclassification associated with the Public Safety Services Division, and it is reclassifying an administrative services position to a compliance specialist position to enable this person to work more efficiently and do the types of work that are needed by the division without adding new staff. The differential associated with that reclass is $24,215 other funds. Package 801 has to do with adding two additional positions to the Public Safety Services Division. $478,925 is for two public safety management positions, 1.76 FTE, and these folks are attributable to the growth in the marijuana regulatory program. When we get to the marijuana division, you'll see that there are a number of additional enforcement officers being added to that program. They report functionally, they sit in this public safety services program, and the management for enforcement officers is for both on the liquor side and the marijuana side sits in this division. So that's why you see it here, if you will, rather than in the marijuana division. For the administration and support division, this is central services for the OLCC, the Legislative Fiscal Office is recommending a budget of $23,023,888 other funds and 79 positions. That's 78.84 FTE. I'm on page 9 of 23 of the Orbitz report for those of you that are following along. So, package 307 converts two limited duration positions to permanent positions. These folks were approved as limited duration when we were gearing up the beginning of the marijuana program in the current biennium. It was thought we would bring all these people on. One of them is a human resource analyst 1, and the other is a compliance specialist 3 position. The human resource analyst is to help with the hiring of additional folks, and the compliance specialist 3 was in the administrative policy and process division. Again, as you've heard, there are no shortage of additional recruitments to do. The agency has also seen people on the liquor side move over to marijuana, and that creates vacancies on the liquor side. So there has been a constant churn of human resources activities that need to be addressed. With regard to the Compliance Specialist 3 position, as the number of applicants in the marijuana program grows beyond forecasts, it's likely that the number of contested cases related to alleged violations or denial of license applications are also going to grow, and those can be particularly complex. So the Legislative Fiscal Office is recommending that we continue these two positions and make them permanent. Package 309 are reclassifications in the Administration and Support Division. Again, I couldn't change the package name, so don't let that throw you. Other funds expenditure limitation of $104,796 is recommended to reclassify a number of positions. I can go through them all individually if anyone is interested, or I can just skip ahead.
I think skip ahead. Okay. We've all got computers or paper copies, and
okay.
I think skip ahead.
All right. Okay. Package 801 in the Administration and Support Division. These are new positions that are being added directly as a result of increases in marijuana-related licensure activity and application activity. So these are central services folks. The Legislative Fiscal Office is recommending adding three positions, 2.84 FTE and $492,106 in other funds expenditure limitation. The positions that are being added include another permanent compliance specialist position in the Administrative Policy and Process Division. There are services and supplies costs also associated with this number. And there's a new procurement and contract specialist position. As you get more employees, they need more stuff, everything from more paper clips to more computers, equipment, regular durable goods that go forward, and there are more contracts that need to be negotiated as well with regard to the licensing systems, the cannabis tracking system, updates that need to be made, etc. So that's the procurement and contract specialist position. And the compliance specialist I already talked about. And there is one more in here as well. I believe there is a I believe that the additional position, I didn't include it in the narrative, I'm going to come back to this when I have a second. So there is a third position in there. I've got to figure out. I'm going to go back and not hold us up right now. So package 814 has to do with IT security positions and consolidating those. You've seen this in other budgets. They're taking one position related to IT security and consolidating it with the Department of Administrative Services. So we're taking $249,577 in other funds expenditure limitation out for that.
I guess I would just ask a sort of rhetorical question, and I would certainly defer to Representative Nierman.
Mm-hmm.
During the time that we're aggregating all of this IT security under the Chief Information Officer, DEQ is getting hacked. And I'm trying to figure out if this is wise. We've done this on a number of other budgets. I am perhaps less concerned about OLCC than I am about PERS, for example. But I am looking for some reassurance from somebody who's on the Substantive Committee and also knows these issues that this is a smart thing to do.
So you're talking about just in general the consolidation of IT under the state CIO. So there was a bill to do that. So that, the governor signed an executive order 1613 that did that, and then we had a bill this session that, and I forget the bill number, that kind of put that into statute. So I think that's fairly wise policy. There's some efficiencies to be gained, and so OLCC is probably about in the. They're kind of like, let's call that like a middle-sized agency, so they might be helped by it or whatever. Some of the bigger agencies like OHA or Fish and Wildlife or whatever have pretty sophisticated IT shops. They're not going to be helped that much. They're pretty well have things under control. It's the smaller agencies and possibly the middle agencies. Maybe DEQ would be one of the middle agencies, too, that would be helped. But I think in the end, I would say it's a positive thing.
Thank you.
So, I finally remembered the third position is basically the transfer of an accountant from the marijuana division to the administration and support division. So it's an existing position that we're moving from one place and putting in another.
That takes us back to page 12.
That takes us back to page 12 and brings us up to the 3 FTE. So, and you'll see that where it's moved out as we go along here. Okay. Let's see, am I going backward or forward?
You're on page 14.
Thank you. All right. So, package 816 has to do with costs associated with Senate Bill 1057. Besides just bringing in the tracking of medical marijuana into a tracking system, the bill also increases the number of commissioners by adding two. To the OLCC for a more regional balance on the commission. And basically, there are some costs associated with adding those two people. That includes per diem, it includes mileage, and it also includes a little remodeling because their commission meeting room is not quite big enough to accommodate that many commissioners. So that's the $95,028 that you see in this package. In the Marijuana Regulation Division, the Legislative Fiscal Office is recommending $14,483,634 other funds and 61 positions, 58.22 FTE. As you can see, when you compare it against the current service level, that's quite a few more, again, to accommodate the increase that we're seeing in licenses. Over and above what we expected. So package 406 is where you see the majority of the new positions being recommended by the Legislative Fiscal Office. There are 27 positions recommended, 24.80 FTE, so they're phased in throughout the biennium. $5,244,870 in other funds expenditure limitation. Now, recall that on this side of the equation, these folks are going to be supported by licensing fees on the new applicants who are actually granted licensure. So of the $5.2 million, $3.8 million of that are personal service costs associated with an additional 22 regulatory specialists, 3 administrative support personnel, and 2 compliance specialist positions. These are recommended to be permanent positions. There are services and supplies costs in there as well that include equipment and vehicles for enforcement officers who will be going out and inspecting premises. Including grow sites and retail sites and processing facilities. There is training costs. Basically, the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training charges a fee to get the enforcement officers through and certified. And there's also new lease costs included in this package because OLCC, frankly, is running out of room. And they're going to need to look at leasing additional office space for their existing employees. Their Milwaukee headquarters is at capacity, and if you have not been there, I believe they did a floor move at the beginning of 15-17, trying to squeeze more people in and compress the the cubicles and get more floor space out of what they currently have.
So I'm going to stop you for just a second and ask the director a question. We heard in another subcommittee, the Department of Revenue, that they're finding it impossible to recruit people. They have 100-plus vacancies and can't find anybody. What gives you the confidence that you can find 27 people? That's question number one. Question number two is that these ones that are going to go out into the field, I don't recall the details from 1057, but even though they have to go to DPSST, I believe they're going out into the field without the option to carry protection, guns. And I just would like you to comment on that. We hear from some of our colleagues that down, particularly in southern Oregon, that OSP are asking for transfers because it's so dangerous. I'm worried about these compliance officers, to be honest with you. They show up in their little state-issued Prius with a notepad and a pen for protection, and they're talking to some kind of bad guys.
I'm co-chair, members of the committee. 27 people to recruit, and recruitment is a lot. We have experienced some trouble, as testified to early on in the marijuana program, actually getting people in place. We're getting better at it, as I said, and we've recently hired. We went into double fill mode in anticipation that we could carry some of these, and obviously had the resources in this biennium. We've had recent success, so I'm feeling that we have a good indication that we're going to be able to get the higher level quality of personnel to match our needs, but I'm not going to say that we didn't go through our very unsuccessful time of trying to recruit and hire. I'm hopeful that we'll get all of these in quickly. We need them quickly to get under the wave that we have in front of us of license applications and backlog that we need to deal with, as well as dealing with the renewal. So challenging. Second part was Southern Oregon or DPSST training and firearms. As you know, we found with this community we license that they've made commitments to the license structure. Our people get to know them within the licensing process and go out and do field inspections. So while I think the overall characterization is one applied more uniformly to the marijuana industry in general, and it seems that or illegal activity of marijuana, not the marijuana industry. Our licensees have made a substantial commitment to come into the regulated system, and to date, repeat that, have not had any inspector tell me they felt in danger at a specific marijuana license facility. I have had that conversation with them about certain bars and around the state.
One last question. Given the high, given the cash nature of this business and given the product that they're dealing with, are these folks background checked, drug tested, and bonded?
Madam Chair, they are background checked, not drug tested. And we had a insurance bonding requirement in legislation. I think we switched it to insurance. But because when we developed our rules, and I'll get back to you on the ultimate outcome, I believe we forgave that because it wasn't commercially available at the time we were producing the rules. The commission has a commitment to make sure these are insured, bonded, and we have protections in place for them and their consumers and their employees. So we'll be revisiting that. But I will get back to you to tell you exactly what the state is. But I believe we currently do not require.
Okay, if you'd tell the professional staff and they can give the information to all of us. Representative Noble.
Thank you. Just a comment. I very much appreciate your comments regarding the growers wanting to be part of the system. I would suggest that you have a plan in the next few years, because I can very easily see where growers become more like bars, especially as you're taking over the medical marijuana checks with people who have been really unregulated, and that dynamic could easily change as you move from
facilitating grows to actually enforcing.
Great, thank you.
Ms. Dyster.
Okay, package 408 reclassifies an existing administrative specialist one position who's currently being paid for work out of class to an operations and policy analyst one position. And the differential over the course of the biennium is $30,564 other funds. The Department of Human Resources has not approved, they have not submitted the paperwork to the Department of to the Department of Administrative Services Chief Human Resources offices yet, so we're recommending that that be unscheduled until that is actually approved, and when it is, we'll reschedule that limitation and enable them to spend it. Okay. So package 801 on page 18 of 23 is that accountant that's transferring out of the marijuana division that we put over in administrative services. Package 816 is the costs associated and personnel associated with Senate Bill 1057, and that is standing up a system in which to get medical marijuana growers into the cannabis tracking system. The costs associated with that are $1,502,105 other funds. We're looking at seven positions, 6.42 FTE associated with that. Now, there are some assumptions associated with Senate Bill 1057, and the number of enforcement officers that might be needed to ensure that these growers are actually inputting information correctly to do those inspections and then report it back to OHA are not included in this number right now. We will have a better idea of how many of these medical marijuana folks may stay with OHA versus transfer over and become OLCC licensees after December 31st, 2017. There is a provision in the bill that asks those folks to basically declare what their intentions are, if they're going to stay with OHA or if they're going to come over and be OLCC licensees. So
why is that an employee declaration? Is it not where the... tell me how Lynn Saxton and Steve Marks get to affect that decision.
Oh, I'm sorry. If I can clarify,
Please. It's
the growers are making a declaration about whether or not they intend to stay as OHA medical marijuana folks or whether or not they intend to become OLCC licensees. So that will further influence potential future costs associated with this program.
I think it's getting increasingly difficult for some of us that drive by the proliferation of shops that say med rec. It's pretty hard to distinguish who's doing what now, just in terms of where they should be licensed and who should have the oversight responsibilities.
So the setup costs for this program basically consist of two administrative specialist positions, three compliance specialist positions to basically help put together a new module in the cannabis tracking system and make and train those medical folks how to input their items in there appropriately, and an operations and policy analyst three position to help put together the program rules in place and facilitate the interagency agreements that are going to need cooperation that's going to need to happen between OHA and OLCC, as well as a program management position. You also have services and supplies costs. There's a one-time cost of an estimated $400,000 for changes to the existing cannabis tracking system for this new module, for this new group of I'm going to call them quasi-licensees because they won't technically be OLCC licensees unless until December 31st, if at all. So those are the components of this particular package, and it is likely that enforcement personnel will have to be added once we know how many of these growers are going to be where. OLCC will have to go out and inspect premises regardless, whether they're doing it on behalf of OHA or whether they're doing it on behalf of themselves will influence how those enforcement officers are paid for. Okay. So that brings us to page 20. This is store operating expenses. The Legislative Fiscal Office is recommending $123,927,415 other funds for store operating expenses. Again, these are the special payments that go out directly to liquor agents. There is no employees associated with this particular division. This is the agent's compensation that's paid at an average of 8.93% of sales. There is an adjustment to this division of $3,360,310 that is attributable to the bottle surcharge associated, as we've talked about. And it's also attributed to an assumed retail expansion effort. If you have more stores, we're expecting 3% in additional sales over and above current service level because we have new stores, and so therefore we're assuming that we're going to increase agents' compensation because there will be more sales due to more stores. So that's a mathematical calculation just associated with that. So,
Ms. Dyster, that's still, I don't pretend that I understand this well at all, but if there are more stores, more sales, you spread the agent's comp across the stores and the sales, and you just do the math. And so the thing that remains missing for me is the ability for my characterization, the resources, the guys that invest in their stores that are making huge efforts to modernize, to have interesting inventory, all the rest of that, are rewarded at exactly the same rate of pay that the others are?
Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee, we calculate agents' compensation based upon an average of sales. So there are different classes of stores. The individual agents might earn more or less depending upon what class of store they are. But for our purposes, this calculation is an average across all stores and all calculations, or all classes. So if they are selling, you know, if they bump up against this limitation, the OLCC can come to an emergency board or a subsequent meeting of the legislature and request additional expenditure limitations so we can ensure that agents are paid what they are expecting to be paid under the current compensation formula. Okay, so that's the first thing. But remember that this 8.93% is a rate. So the more you sell, ostensibly, the more you will make. Your overhead costs are fixed.
Unless we stick you with new credit card costs.
Well, there you go.
Madam Chair, just for the record of that, more you sell, your rate actually levels and goes down a bit. I think the average at the top is 6 point, Bill.
It's probably close to 7%.
Yeah, close to 7.
I just have to say, for as long as I've been here, we've been studying agents' comp, and it does not make sense to me to reward the folks that work the hardest with less money, nor does it make any sense to me to now begin a discussion about increasing expenses, reducing market share with additional stores, because you can only slice a pie so many ways, even with the influx of New Oregonians. And not have an agent comp discussion clearly on the table as part of that mix. And I know that there's been a recent proposal. I presented it among others to the co-chairs. I reassure us where that conversation happens. These are our frontline sales force.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, so we're absolutely committed to have that conversation. We need to have that conversation for a variety of reasons. One, our system has not been updated in terms of the store classifications. I think we can do a better job grading where those stores go. But I am perplexed about the incentives that have been laid into a formula that have been there for decades, right? You remember our prior budget director who appeared and finally explained the formula to the task force 2 years ago. Quite complex. It's been around for a long time, and I don't know that the incentives in the formula provide the drivers that we want out of our new system. It's very much like a school funding formula when you look at the division parts. I just see too many analogies there. So it's been put together over time to balance out different factors and costs and size. And small stores in Eastern Oregon, part of them are subsidized by a base rate, and then you put the variable rate on it. It's differentiated by on-premises and off-premises or store sales. And it is time that we go through and look at all the factors in it and see if we can make improvements and whether the top-end incentive actually keeps you going up as you sell more liquor along the way. As you know, with all those discussions, very much like the school budget discussion, it's a zero-sum game when you play it inside the fixed budget. So there will be winners and losers if we reallocate the formula internally. Certainly presents opportunities to come to you for choices, but I think we've got a fixed budget situation in this discussion. So we're going to have the discussion. It's, as you know, hard to align with our agents, right? There are different levels of interest. Some want to just run their stores and get their reimbursement, and life's good, and they run retail very well for us. Others are engaged in these policy decisions at a high level, and we'll bring them together as best we can to get back to you with a sensible discussion about the formula once again. I will say a lot of good people have looked at that formula for a long time.
Okay. Ms. Deister.
Okay. So package 09.
Sorry, Senator Monroe.
When you get your formula fixed, then will you join me and start working on the school formula, because it's just a screwed up.
All right, moving right along, Ms. Deister.
Okay, so package 090 is additional expenditure limitation that is attributable to the 50-cent surcharge, and package 801 is the additional expenditure limitation that's attributable to the 3% retail expansion initiative that needs to go out to agents in order to maintain that 8.93% average sales. So, page 23 of 23, the Legislative Fiscal Office recommends a budget of $227,943 for capital improvements to the existing OLCC facility. You will see as you look at this sheet a big phase out of $4.2 million. That was for the roof and for the conveyor system that was approved this for the 15-17 biennium. So those were one-time expenses that were phased out of the budget. So that.
Colleagues, before we move forward to any motions, any questions of Ms. Deister or the agency? Co-Chair Gomper.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Ms. Deister, 23 pages. If you could just give me a Reader's Digest version, what in here changes the environment for our agents, for our liquor stores?
Co-chair, members of the committee, actually very little. Their agents' compensation rate is maintained at 8.93% of sales. So we have made adjustments and to various, you know, puts and takes, as I've just described, and ensured that that average rate of compensation is maintained for agents. as we've done those puts and takes. But generally speaking, there aren't enhancements that are, you know, to that basic average rate that are included in this budget.
Right. Thank you.
Okay. Colleagues, any other questions for Ms. Dyster? As a courtesy, Mr. Director, anything you want to say before we start doing motions?
Sure. First, I want to really appreciate the hard work that went into doing one of the only growth budgets in all state government right now, right? A pretty unpredictable budget, and we continue to have, even here, problems predicting where we'll end up. So we appreciate the understanding of dealing with that and the hard work that Michelle and others have done to deal with all of the variations of possible scenarios for our future. I think if in the end this is a very, very good budget for the agency for moving forward. I think it gives us the flexibility to move forward on all fronts. I'll just tell you where I'm a little concerned. I'm a little concerned with expansion. We have the 3% there. We're a little less dollars. We'll have to work on that, but it's here. It's a goal in front of us, and we'll do everything we can to attain that. I was concerned with driving the marijuana portion of the budget. You know, we paid for 3 months of reserving, which is great. It's the right policy. There's no doubt about that. I could have done with a month and a half less and a few more licensing positions that were reduced in that budget, but it's a good place for us to start. We have opportunities to look at those real numbers and move forward. So in that regard, I think it puts us in a good position to work with you to meet the needs of the program going forward. I am really grateful that both the declare is in there for the medical part of the program transfer, that December declare. If those numbers are up, I'd expect to see us here at the December emergency board, because we have to get those people hired, and we have a window in May, April to actually get them certified and trained. So we need to bring on as many people as rapidly as we can if that numbers drive us there. And then lastly, and this is an issue that I prioritized and we prioritized as an agency moving forward and wasn't in the governor's budget. It was not contemplated in the same way that it is here, and we're late talking about the need for a CIO position. In our budget request, we asked for a position that would help us manage strategically our capital needs and our IT needs together. This is a significant need for the agency. Our first strategic plan that we put together at the agency, I've been there 3.5 years, so it was in year one, the agency identified the risk to IT. Our two risk audits of the past 2 years, IT remains our highest risk. We've taken on a lot of new system developments. Some of those are under contractors that we have with the state, you know, NIC USA, and we've now worked with the cannabis tracking system, our contractor, Framwell, for some time. Those are evolving, but we got to negotiate new costs and new programming to take on the medical part of the program. What I really worry about is the business management systems in the warehouse. I worry about its integration with our financial systems. If we make changes to our accounting practices, we're going to be necessitated to work on that system. And then, as you know, as we grow the system, our whole speed is moving much faster than it used to. And anything that we confront in changes of the old software system pretty much require manual workarounds, the finding of ways to get the system to accommodate it. New liquor bottles, we were running out of slots. We have a distillery retail agent who wants to do distilled spirits growlers. They want to put them in, and the irony is they got to price each one of those things, so it's not a group pricing for it, so each kind of bottle at its location. It's going to cause us to use up a bunch of slots. Well, that's something you didn't contemplate before. We worked our way around getting them enough positions in the warehouse management system for all of the variety of products they're going to have. Let me assure you, having said that, I'm convinced that it's pretty much you're going to walk out of the place with the bottle that's sealed, very much as safe as any distilled spirit that you'd walk out of a store with. I think in the store it's a different situation. So they have started some of these in Hood River. So anyway, that's just an example of something. Another thing, if we need to go working with our agents too, and I'll say it, home delivery. And some, you know, there's not a retail business in the world that doesn't do any home delivery. We actually have home delivery of marijuana items. But if you're going to have a state-run system in the future, you're going to have to think about the things that you need for your market in the future. And if I was a private business, I'd be planning on that for a variety of goods. This happens to be a controlled state item, and I understand that. But there's controlled ways to think about making that work. A lot of new business needs. Let's not highlight home delivery, but I'm just using that as an example. If you need some forward thinking about what goes in the warehouse. But the base of it is we need to account for it in our financial transactions and our sales as quickly as we can. I don't have, inside the agency, high-level IT planning and strategic capabilities to help us. Now, I understand this wasn't requested. I understand it was late, but the Secretary of State's going to be doing an IT audit. I mean, I think I could write a lot of that audit for them in terms of the weaknesses it shows. We're not going to crash tomorrow, but we have significant weaknesses moving into the future, and I'd certainly like to be in position over the next 2 years to do planning around that. You know, I don't know when my tenure is, but I'd like to at least get this off the board well enough so that, you know, we handed you would understand the IT plan for OLCC moving into the future, and that I can't do for you. So I want to point that out. It's important to us, and it is not on the table.
Thank you. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, you have heard, or gentlemen, you have heard the LFO recommendation. Co-Chair Gomberg.
Thank you, Co-Chair. I would move the LFO recommendations on House Bill 5019.
Colleagues, any questions? Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Okay. With regard to performance measures for the Oregon Liquor Control Commission, there are two proposed new performance measures, number 7 and number 8. Number 7 is sales to minors for recreational marijuana. It was basically modeled on the KPM number 1, which is the percentage of licensees who refuse to sell to minor decoys. The OLCC has expressed an intention to do minor decoy operations for recreational marijuana stores as well. We basically picked a target. We have no data on which to base this on, but it's going to, for the time being, mirror the target for the liquor side of the sales to minors KPM. And then KPM number 8 is the time to license. Those marijuana licensees, the average days to license a completed marijuana application. And that target is not, again, is a target of 85 days. I believe that was the average that OLCC was experiencing in the 15-17 biennium once licensing applications were completed. And so the hope is to not have that erode further going forward. It may be a challenge because of the growth in licensees that we have seen until they get their full force of enforcement and licensing personnel on board to accommodate all of these new people. So whether or not they're going to hit that target in 2018, we shall see, but I think it is still probably a legitimate starting point going forward.
Okay. Colleagues, any questions of Ms. Dyster about the key performance measures? Co-Chair Gomberg.
Madam Co-Chair, I move the LFO recommendation on key performance measures.
Colleagues, any questions? Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Ms. Dyster.
Okay.
Well, you're getting to that page. I want to ask a question I should know the answer to. Given the number of employees that are now within this industry projected to go up as high as 30,000, as presented in the LFO report, who is responsible for doing the inspections relative to their working conditions, their pay, certifying payrolls? Does that remain a BOLI responsibility, or does that fall to your field inspectors?
Does not fall to, excuse me, Madam Chair, Steve Marks for the record. It's still a BOLI function in the state. We still have our same responsibilities there with labor. Our only job around the, well, there's a lot of things we do with the tracking system, but is to permit them and do the background checks as a part of that process of bringing those employees forward.
And then does it stand to reason for workplace safety issues that would still fall to OSHA?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. All right, Ms. Deister.
Okay, so with regard to recommended changes, the Legislative Fiscal Office recommends a budget of $207 million. There is a misprint here. $207,708,449 other funds and 304 positions, 298.82 FTE. And you will be happy to note that the Dash 1 amendment is actually correct. The Dash 1 amendment that you have before you does reflect the $207,708,449 of other funds expenditure limitation.
So this is just a typo in the presentation material.
Exactly.
Okay, Mr. Co-Chair.
Madam Co-Chair, the Dash 1 amendment is being correct. I move adoption of the Dash 1 amendment to House Bill 5019.
Colleagues, any questions? Any discussion? Any objection? The amendment is adopted. Mr. Co-Chair.
I move 5019 as amended to the full committee with a do pass recommendation.
Colleagues, you've heard the motion. Any questions? Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. We need carriers. Do we have a House volunteer?
I'll volunteer.
All right.
Okay. Representative Nierman will take it to the House floor. And we need a then Senate volunteer for full, and Senator Monroe volunteers double duty, full and the floor.
Okay.
All right. Ms. Deister, anything else? We made it. Despite
made
our
it.
Best efforts to drag it to 2:30, we fulfilled your wish that we were done early. Anything else for the committee?
I believe, will be back here to discuss a couple of bills, three bills tomorrow. You have a full week ahead of you, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. So,
okay.
There you go.
Colleagues, anything for the good of the order?
Madam Co-Chair, I think it's happy hour somewhere. Let's adjourn.
That motion is accepted. We're adjourned.